And I guess I haven't come to any conclusions on the vaccination issue, but, well, to begin to discuss it is to begin to start down the road to understanding it better, hopefully. Let's go musical for a moment and can get back to the usual business of the show.
Okay, let's do this. Thank you, Madam Secretary, for joining us to discuss the Department of Education's 2020 budget proposal.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I look forward to your questions.
Calm down. You've made some controversial requests, to say the very least, so let me go ahead and get right to the most questionable. On page 39, you propose firing all teachers and replacing them with Christmas trees. Can you elaborate on that?
Thank you, Chairwoman, for that question. Actually, the data that we have shows very...
Reclaiming my time! My time is up. I yield to my colleague. Thank you. Hey, Betts, it's me again. Your proposal also calls for major cuts, including, this must be a typo, almost $18 million in federal funding for the Special Olympics.
Yes, that's correct.
Really? Wow, you're going to hell.
Well, sir, we have continued to retain the funding levels for IDEA and held that level.
Cruella DeVos, Cruella DeVos, of basic brain function, she suffers a loss. She might be even dumber than her boss. Cruella DeVos, where kids are concerned, she'll proudly admit, if they're underprivileged, she don't give a shit. Our education system's screwed because of Betsy Cruella DeVos. She can't be bothered learning information.
I'm not familiar with that.
Couldn't fill a thimble with her thoughts.
Well, so
her paychecks? Souvenirs. She bathes in teachers' tears and burns up school supplies to fuel her yacht. She steps on the poor to boost VIPs. In her own profession, she's earned no degrees. So hide your children if you come across Cruella, Cruella DeVos.
You also recommend textbooks with no pages and, quote, kicking old ladies just for fun.
We had to make difficult decisions in the budget.
She might be the worst that ever was. Cruella DeVos.
Betsy DeVos taking heat on Capitol Hill.
We'll certainly look into that.
Her hair never moves. Wow. Her eyes never blink.
Why?
She starts to perspire when she has to think.
Yeah.
Her head is full of lies and applesauce.
Cruella DeVos.
You know she eats babies, don't play. Her grammar ain't great, 'cause Betsy can't spell. The Special Olympics can go right to hell. To anyone in need, she says no, ma.
Isn't it awful, darling?
From Betsy Cruella DeVos. She's got no time for public education. She's out of touch and lacks all basic skills. She buys all her careers. She lies through her veneers and blows her nose with $100 bills.
Everybody!
She's callous and cruel, synthetically sweet, unethical, shameless, aloof, and elite. This song's too short to list all of the flaws. Effects, I mean Cruella DeVos. She's so dumb.
That's it.
That was Cruella DeVos, the latest Randy Rainbow song parody. You can follow the video, which adds a dimension to the whole thing, on YouTube. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris, and this show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, in case you tuned in late. It is archived at the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website at huffsantacruz.org, where we have, yeah, probably thousands of old shows for those of you who have historical interest in voices from the street that you really aren't likely to hear much of elsewhere. I mean, there are some places you can go. Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz Facebook page is one. County Homeless Advocates Facebook page is another. Food Not Bombs Facebook page is another. And there are some websites you can get information on and some current video clips. But if you want a running stream of commentary, particularly my commentary and that of other people I interview, check out the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org and the show, which is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, every Thursday from 6 to 8 and every Sunday, that's in the evening, and every Sunday in the morning from 9:30 all the way into the afternoon until 3 o'clock. Now I'm going to give a call to activist Brent Adams, who I haven't had much conversation with in the last couple of weeks. We kind of had a rough patch there for a while, but I've spoken to him earlier today, and he's up for an update, and so I'm going to see if we can check in on him and see what he's up to. Let's give him a ring and see what's cooking. And he's probably at his day and night storage and may be able to reach him. I think we'll probably catch him, if not now, then possibly later. Hopefully we'll get Brent later. Looks like he's not answering or probably busy doing some business on the phone with other folks. He's a busy guy. So on Friday, that was a couple days ago, at the Ross Camp, a gathering of a few folks from the Ross Camp Council, attorney Anthony Prince, a video journalist Wes White of the Monterey County Homeless Advocates, myself, a few other folks, got together with, well, we called a press conference in order to discuss the lawsuit that was filed on Tuesday in federal court, essentially trying to stop the city from closing the Ross Camp until such time as it actually found adequate indoor shelter for all the people there, which is actually kind of a requirement of the Boise decision, the Martin versus Boise federal court decision in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And rather than go on about it myself here, I will let the folks at the conference or the press conference go out about it. I'm one of them, so you'll be able to hear me. And you'll also be able to hear the voices of the actual people who are doing the lawsuit and the attorney who's advising them, Anthony Prince, of course, has been on the show before. So it's about 11:30 on April 12th. I'm here at the Ross Camp. Jessica York of the Sentinel is here, as is Anthony Prince, Keith McHenry, Wes White doing some video journalism, Ursula Reed, myself, and there was a bunch of Ross Camp Council plaintiffs here, but they have disappeared into their tents, but hopefully they will return before Jessica York hits the road. Ah, here comes Desiree Quintero, I believe her last name is, as well as Alicia Cool, who's the Ross Camp coordinator. Weather is sunny, a little windy, and we're about to begin with just at least one plaintiff, which is good.
Yeah. All right,
I'll be right here. The press conference is about to begin, and I've spoken to Jessica York about mentioning that if the camp takes up the shelters, then there'll be nothing left for the rest of the homeless community, which she hasn't put in her stories.
The local media for coming out, and we have a few announcements to make. My name is Anthony Prince. I'm general counsel for the California Homeless Union, statewide organizing council. We have six locals here in California, mainly in Northern California, that a union of homeless people for homeless people. And I'm going to turn it over to Alicia Cool. We're here today to talk about the fact that we have filed in federal district court a lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz and other defendants. So Alicia's going to explain the lawsuit, and then we'll have a few other speakers, and we'll take some questions. Okay? Alicia Cool? Alicia is one of the plaintiffs and the lead plaintiff in the case.
Thank you, Anthony. My name's Alicia Cool. I've been acting as the Ross Camp liaison. I have helped to file a lawsuit on the 8th and 14th Amendments. We have some very serious concerns that the city plans on disbanding this encampment, and they do not have available shelter beds for indoor available shelter beds for all the members of this camp, let alone the homeless population in Santa Cruz as a whole. So it would be a violation to criminalize these people for this act of survival. And we have a very serious concern about the way the city has been handling it. We also have a very serious concern over the way they plan on doing the cleanup. We've asked some pertinent questions as to what that would look like, what they would be coming back to. The city attorney has refused to answer those questions to date. So, you know, we're really concerned. And I'd like to turn it over to Desiree.
My name is Desiree, and I just want to say that we're not going to stop. We're not going to leave. We're going to stay right here. This cause is a good cause, and we're tired of being treated like we're dirt. We're not. We're human beings, and we bleed just like you guys. And we're good people.
Yeah, you are.
We're good people, and we need a safe place, and this is the safe place right now for us.
Shannon.
My name is Shannon Vidmoska. I'm also a plaintiff in this case. I'm going to make the statement that I made before. It's not okay to judge people by the color of their skin, and it's not okay to judge people based on their sexuality, but it is okay to judge people based on their homelessness. I think that's highly unfair. And if you look at the 10 things that lead to genocide, we're at number 4 in the way they treat the homeless in this county.
Hi, my name is Rafael
Serrano.
I think we have a lot of rights that have been missing here. The shelter has a lot of donations, money from churches and companies, and we not even have a penny part of that for homeless people, you know. We don't have food, we don't have showers. We need a place to live, and we stay here, and we're happy to be stay here. We don't ask the city for more, but you know, just to leave us alone, and not breaking our rights, you know.
Santos.
Hi, my name is Santos. I've been here for about 9 months, and what we're trying to hear here is we're trying to have a community that everybody can depend on everybody. And everybody can rely on everybody. So when anybody needs any help, we try to help them all out.
No,
you know,
agree here.
You know, I mean, no, everybody gets fed. There is no closed mouth here, you know. All you have to do is ask for what you need. Oops, sorry.
No women have been raped here.
Or nobody's even died here from overdose of alcohol, of anything, you know.
Nobody's died alone this year. No.
I mean, we just have to look at one thing and help everybody else out. That's all we have to do.
People die every year of exposure and drug OD. And here we've had no deaths of exposure. We had no deaths of ODs. And the people who have died here didn't die alone. And that's something to be said, because last year, 5 or 6 of us died alone.
That's right. They're dear friends of ours.
And people died of exposure. People died of ODs. And that's not happening here. We're keeping each other safe. There's no homeless women being raped here. There's no violence here except for what happens on the freeways when they go by and throw firecrackers at us.
Or shoot guns.
Yeah. Nobody goes hungry. Nobody goes without clothes. Everybody's got somebody to talk to. This is a community.
They were homeless.
And I don't see the police going into your neighborhood and going door to door and checking for warrants. But they do that here.
Yeah, daily.
On a daily basis.
You know?
And that's one thing is that I want to advocate for is that we need available shelter that treats people with dignity and respect.
And no sexual harassment.
These are people just like any other people, and I don't feel like your rights should be taken away as far as freedom to come and go. Freedom to have personal belongings without being unnecessarily searched. People assuming things about you, demanding your analysis, demanding that you go into treatment programs that you may or may not need. We need to treat people like they're just regular citizens. I mean, these are just people. So I would like to see local people, our community members. We need to treat them with the same respect that we treat other community members and not expect unnecessary things from them that you wouldn't expect from a tenant, you know? I'd like to see shelters that honor dignity and respect without barbed wire, that don't treat people like they can't be trusted.
Belittle and subjugate.
Just because you're homeless doesn't mean you can't be trusted. Just because you can't afford $3,000 for rent doesn't mean you can't be trusted or you're crazy or you're on drugs. That's a lot of money. A lot of jobs in this town don't support paying that kind of rent. So, you know, we have a lot of issues around here.
I used to have ID from the shelter, and my ID has stolen, so I don't have a right to go shower because I don't have ID. So what about the people worse in the offices and, like, walking around the shelter? They should be taking pictures of people and make it IDs for us, you know? Why not we have a right to have another ID?
When the ID started at the shelter, just to show that they know that it's not right, when the ID started at the shelter, I went to the synagogue and had a conversation with the rabbi because my great-aunt Gladys had numbers tattooed on the inside of her arm. And it seemed to me like branding, like wearing a gold star would be, to have an ID around your neck that says that you're homeless. Yeah. And I talked to the rabbi about it. And when I went down the next day to the shelter, the rabbi and a lawyer were leaving the office, said, I am not required to have an ID. It says on my file when it comes up, no ID required. So they know those IDs are a tag. They know they're incorrect because they didn't do it for me because I'm Jewish and it's a personal issue with World War II. And they know that that's not okay. And or they wouldn't have made it so I can get in and out of that shelter without an ID. They know what they're doing. They're fully aware of what they're doing.
And we have better options. So to say that we don't have better options is not true. There's been several people and organizations in this community that have proposed transitional encampments. We could do like tiny homes on them so that they, you know, would qualify. We've put in proposals. We've done an outline of 5 basic rules that would treat people with dignity and respect and not take their rights away. And the city has basically put off accepting any idea for solutions, I feel like. They've taken off the table any encampments in, most recently, in neighborhoods and parks, which is basically anywhere. So I feel like they're not really accepting solutions. They say they need a nonprofit. I've actually partnered with Keith here from Food Not Bombs. So we're willing to provide the basics for a better encampment that would be much cleaner, much organized. But the city is reluctantly saying no to that. And
stonewalling you.
Right. And so I'd like Keith, if he would like to speak about Food Not Bombs and maybe our idea and our lawsuit.
Yeah, so I'm Keith McHenry with Food Not Bombs, and we know, feed many of these people for years here in Santa Cruz, and they're our close personal friends that live in this camp. And the camp has been a blessing to people living on the streets in that it's been a way of stabilizing their lives. And it would be just horrible if people were evicted or kicked out back into doorways in yards. We've also seen that the amount of food that we're sharing is surprisingly stable on the weekends, and that is largely because there is access to food here, including when we bring food here and when churches come. And so that's been a huge, huge relief for dealing with the problem of hunger in Santa Cruz. Also, we receive many, many requests for information on shelter. We're often, because we're at the post office, the first people that newly homeless people come across. And they come and they ask us, where is the shelter? Where can I get in? And we offer them, we call for them the different shelter spaces. And it's been, I don't think ever, that we have actually placed anybody in a shelter in all these years of calling to try to find a place for people to stay. So at this point, the final option that we have is maybe go and see if there's space at Ross Camp, or Heroes Camp as I call it, because when it first started, the homeless that were living here were the heroes of the major car accident that happened across the street. If it wasn't for them, there's a possibility that several people may have died. And so to me, this is very, very important to keep the camp going, to respect the people that are living here. And I think in the policies of the city council, if you were going to have a council on experts on homelessness, the people you'd want would be the homeless. And they know what is going on the streets. Any of us that have ever lived on the streets know that many of the proposals and the stonewalling of the city is something that we've experienced for years and years, and that basically if somebody wants to know what homeless people need, ask homeless people what they need, and they will be happy to tell you, because they are just other Americans, other workers, just like everybody else. We have people that live, I'm sure there's plumbers here, there's carpenters, electricians, all kinds of
grandmas.
talented grandmothers. There's all kinds of talent, years and years and years of talent living in this camp. And so there shouldn't be a them and an us. That we are all in this together. And many of the people that might want this camp driven away may come back to me, as many have, and said, well, I thought the homeless were horrible people. I did everything I was supposed to, and in the end, I too became homeless. And my conversation with you 3 years ago, where I chewed you out for helping enable the homeless, turns out to be I was wrong. And it's really amazing that many people over the years have come to me and said that. And so I really hope that the authorities hear that if they want to find out what's going on with people living outside, they just need to really talk to people that live outside, or people that have lived outside, and take their actual real needs into account.
I think Anthony would like to give an update.
Well, okay, my name is Anthony Prince. As I said before, I'm with the California Homeless Union Statewide Organizing Council. I happen to be their general legal counsel. And what we're doing is we are providing support to the members of the Ross Camp Council and those who live in the camp. Stay with us here, Keith. Oh, he's got a call. And what we're doing is providing support by way of advising, giving legal advice. However, I want to point out that this is a pro se lawsuit. Alicia Kuhl is the lead plaintiff. We have declarations from Santos, from Desiree, from Shannon, and others who filed declarations under penalty of perjury to notify the federal district court. The lawsuit was filed on Tuesday. Yesterday, Martin Bernal, the city manager, issued a statement, and he wouldn't even say that the homeless have sued the city of Santa Cruz. He talked about others might initiate litigation. Well, guess what? It ain't no might. The lawsuit was filed on Tuesday in federal district court down in San Jose. They don't want to admit that the homeless have gone into the ring to fight, not just here in the community, but in the legal arena as well. I want to say also that, as Keith just pointed out, everyone is one step away from homelessness. We just had a federal shutdown a few weeks ago. Career civil service federal employees were in the food lines. Mm-hmm. They were at the shelters, and they were one step away from becoming homeless and being evicted from their apartments. Tens of thousands of them. So if federal employees, civil servants, are that close, what does it say about the people in Santa Cruz? So we're urging the entire community to realize that the way people are being treated here is very well, as Keith said, might be the way they're going to be treated should they lose their homes and have to sleep outdoors. We're also asking the court to issue, or the plaintiffs here asking the court to issue a temporary restraining order to stop any further actions to break up this camp until such time, or unless and until they are able to offer indoor safe shelter. Martin versus Boise is a Ninth Circuit decision which says that it is unconstitutional and a violation of the Eighth Amendment to criminally cite or sanction or otherwise punish people for being outdoors when there is no alternative indoor shelter. It's a major Ninth Circuit decision, and we're here to fight to see to it that the city of Santa Cruz accepts that decision and follows it. And they're making a lot of noise, but so far we've been able to push them back. They first said March 15th they were going to break up the camp. We had a meeting just before then to train people to file this lawsuit. Then they said April 17th. That's been vacated. And so we feel confident we're part of this struggle to push back. So I think the last thing I would say about it is that we're training people. The homeless union is training those who live in the camps how to file their own complaints, how to file their own lawsuits. And we're suing not only the city of Santa Cruz, we've also sued the Take Back Santa Cruz organization, because it's come to our attention, and we have signed sworn declarations from people who live in this camp that they have been shot at with paintballs, they have had frozen water bottles thrown at them, and they have seen the perpetrators drive away in cars with Take Back Santa Cruz bumper stickers. We have seen hate-filled speech on the internet, creating a very dangerous climate for people, and we think that the Take Back Santa Cruz needs a clean house. If their whole concept of Take Back Santa Cruz suggests that someone has taken their city away from them. The homeless have not taken anything away from anybody, and we are very concerned. We added them as a defendant because based on the declarations, it was clear that they're fomenting or maybe fomenting a climate of violence.
Numerous.
If I was the leadership of Take Back Santa Cruz, I would be immediately taking steps to curb the members of that organization and restrict what they put out there and see to it that they are not going to be responsible for these acts of violence. But until such time as they do that, we've asked the court to intervene.
You know what? They tried to steal my bike from me. I just built it, and they walked up to me and said, "That you stole that bike," and they tried to take it away from me. And it took him about 20 minutes, and he still couldn't take it away from me. And I drug him all the way to, like, where the bridge is and kept going back and back until my friend grabbed a big dumpster and pushed it into him, and he had Santa Cruz, everything, white truck, everything, you guys, everything. I know who the guy is.
Wes, do you want to say anything? Since we have your presence here.
Come on,
Wes.
Okay. Wes White, president of Salinas Homeless Union, Monterey County. You've basically already said most of it. You know, my experience has been, I've been to multiple jurisdictions, and it seems like all of them, it doesn't matter how little, how much, how clean, how dirty, just the fact that you're there and you're not paying rent, you're automatically disposable and a target to be picked up, actually, you know, cited or arrested. That's what we're looking for. A weak legal pretext by way of not being able to afford rent gives them an in, and they're looking for people on parole, you know, probation, so then they can cite them for something else, give them a ticket for something silly like having a tent. And, it was really insulting when the Mayor Watkins said, recreational camping, as if this is something for fun. This is survival, and I don't think the city, any jurisdiction, is interested in acknowledging that, and that's heartbreaking because they are public servants, and if they're not serving the public, United States citizens, and they're all assumed to be United States citizens, they have rights, and we're choosing to ignore those on purpose.
One thing I want to point out is that even if you're not a United States citizen, you still have constitutional rights. The United States Constitution protects everybody in this country, citizen or non-citizen. We don't make any distinction. And that's not the issue here. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
I know that that's what Wes meant. So we're taking up for everyone in this camp, and we will continue to support the homeless residents of Ross Camp, and we are going to, the next step for us, is we've already been given instructions by the court. We're going to follow those instructions. We served the city attorney on Tuesday. We're going to serve other defendants. We've already contacted the city attorney to begin the process of exchanging information and evidence. We're very serious. We're going to continue to help these guys. I can't tell you how proud we are to see homeless people learning the law, taking the matters into their own hands by filing their own lawsuit. This has never happened before in Santa Cruz history. Never has a group of homeless people not represented by an attorney filed a lawsuit in federal district court. So we think we've already been able to stay the hand of the city already. Just by whether the court gives us the temporary restraining order or not, they've already restrained themselves because we pushed them from breaking up this camp. But the fight is just beginning. It's going to be in court, it's going to be here in the community, and it's going to be in the court of public opinion as well. So maybe some questions?
Yeah, we'd like to know if the press has any questions.
Yeah. Does the removal of the closure date impact the injunction if you don't have a date to prevent?
Well, the fact that they've vacated the removal date, we think that's a good thing. And it's possible if the court learns of that, they might say, well, there is no imminent harm here, and they might not grant the TRO for that reason, which is fine because it was the very fact that we sought the temporary restraining order and filed the lawsuit that we think was part of their process of saying, okay, it looks like we're going to have to vacate that date. However, we're still seeking a temporary restraining order because they're talking about doing this cleanup. We're concerned that the cleanup will just be a subterfuge, an end run, that they'll effectively close the camp under a pretext of a cleanup. And so we're still pursuing the temporary restraining order. It's up to the court when and if they'll issue one. We're going to present additional evidence to the court as to why we fear this action. And we're not going to, if we get the TRO, fine. If we don't, we still have the underlying lawsuit. We have an Eighth Amendment claim, 14th Amendment claims. We're going up against a longstanding policy and practice in the city of Santa Cruz. And we're going to prove in court that they're acting in an unconstitutional manner.
Any other questions? Yeah, you mentioned that you had asked about details for the cleanup from the city attorney, but have you also asked, I think the fire chief was sort of taking lead on that?
I have asked the fire chief. He also didn't have specifics. He said that he would get back to me early next week and let me know and that we would have notice, but he didn't give me any advance specifics and he didn't answer the questions that I had asked of Mr. Condotti.
Okay. So no timeline?
No timeline, no details from either person at this point.
You want me to say anything?
Sure, and I think Robert would like to speak.
Yes. So, I, as you know, Jessica, work with Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and have handed you this flyer, Santa Cruz's History of Homeless Persecution, which goes through a whole number of individual... Well, there's a whole context in which this harassment of the homeless takes place. Most recently, you may remember in the Sentinel, benches have been removed from around the county from bus stops.
Yep.
This happened, of course, throughout the downtown area after the earthquake, in spite of promises. You have the cutoff of meals over at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it, across the street. Mm-hmm. Of course, the city has long had draconian laws around sleeping and camping, spare changing and sitting, even being on such a thing as innocent as a bench downtown. They have put a one-hour limit on sitting on a bench downtown, which clearly targets homeless people. I mean, perhaps also disabled residents nearby, but they would call that probably collateral damage. There's an unprecedented stay-away ordinance that officers can invoke if they want to get someone out of a park for a long period of time, even without going to a court. All they have to do is issue what's called any kind of infraction, and they can force them away on pain of a year's penalty of their misdemeanor if they violate it. There are things like no standing on the median lines. They've closed off City Hall. They've closed off the library. And they've closed off the county building grounds at night when peaceful protesters who have long been protesting these laws try to come and raise the issues that really this camp through its existence is raising now. This camp itself is, as has been mentioned here, is a community. And that's the real thing I think the city wants to eliminate here. They don't want an independent community in this area. They want to have something managed by, controlled by, led by, and dominated by a whole social service process that is a transition to what? There is no housing it transitions to. I saw in one of the stories, it was today's paper, maybe yesterday's, maybe one of yours, maybe one of Mike Todd's, a claim that by Phil Kramer that they put lots of people into housing. My attempts to get accurate stats from Phil Kramer have led nowhere. He conceals the budget of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center, as some call it. There's massive police response to simple individual homeless activity, whether it's sitting next to a building. You get six cars, five police officers showing up. If you look at this, there's a whole history of laws, and I'm not going to go into them because you have them and you know about them, Jessica. You've seen them, and I don't think you've been terribly interested in them, but I hope that you do become interested in them because they are of interest to ordinary people. Thank you.
I just want to quickly point out that the city has no open restrooms that are available to the public. And in fact, the restrooms that are behind you are actually the most accessible and several in one location
porta-potties.
Porta-potties for the homeless to use. There are no bathrooms, but for the bathrooms that are right there, the people here would have probably no restroom in the city to use at all.
Three downtown.
Yeah, you have to go to a restaurant.
Yeah, I want to clean something. I used to live on Capitola.
Very few and none 24 hours.
That's your phone.
I used to live on Capitola for 14 years, and I cannot even have a right to go or to go back to Capitola on my bike with my backpack because the police sees me like a homeless with my backpack and my trailer on my bike, and they say, go back where you came from. We don't want you here around.
When did that happen?
Like 2 months ago. So it's like I cannot even go visit my friends, you know?
What was your question, Jessica?
Yeah.
I was just clarifying the no bathroom.
There are three porta potties downtown, but as you can see, most of the porta potties are here, and they're here because people gathered here. But there were the same number of people scattered throughout the city without these porta potties before they came here. Hence, the existence of this campground has, in fact, created the services, not the city. They didn't create the services. They had to provide the services because people visibly showed their needs. And that's what's happening here and what I think some of us will hope will continue and why this lawsuit is demanding that Ross Camp not be cleaned out, cleaned up, cleaned away. Cleaning up, yes, with the participation and the assistance of people who can stay here in the campsite, maybe cleaning it up a section at a time, but not by moving everyone away and then allowing a select number to return.
And I'd like to thank the community members that have stepped up and the church organizations and several organizations that have stepped up, because other than like the bathrooms and the hand washing stations, the city has provided very little services to this camp. They have not brought water in. They have not graveled the ground, you know, a little bit of wood chips. But I mean, as far as harm reduction measures and food and hygiene items and things that have kept the people here alive, that has in great amount came from the community and people who have volunteered and stepped up to help the people that are living here. That has not come from the city council. That's come from community members and people with big hearts. So I just want to thank them.
Okay, is that about it?
I think that's it.
Thank you so much for coming out. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. All right. Good work. Good job.
Thank you.
So it's about 11:30 on April 12th. I'm here at the Ross Camp. Jessica York of the Sentinel is here, as is Anthony Prince, Keith McHenry, Wes White doing some video journalism.
But there's no need to go through all that again, is there? We kind of ran through the... That was an audio tape of the conference you just heard, and... Again, there'll be a good video, or at least a video that you can play at the same time as you hear this. I'm sending this audio to Wes White so he can synchronize it with his video in case his video sound isn't so good. And again, you can find that at, you can find that at YouTube channel John Doe 13K. That's the one word John, second word Doe 13K. And there's a variety of videos, which I guess there will soon be one on this particular press conference from last Friday. Another satirical musical break.
Nibbling on Big Macs, coke in the six packs, making decisions that I would rescind. Growling at fake news, singing the shit blues, and I throw my Spartan into the wind. Wasting away again in Mar-a-Lagoville, searching for some woman I can resolve. Some people claim I really should be ashamed, but I know there's no way it's my fault. I've had no affections since the election. the light. She looks like a beauty, a Slovenian cutie. Oh wait, I just realized that's only my wife. Wasting away again in my Mar-a-Lago Hill, searching for Barack policies I can know. That was my aim, clearly Obama's to blame. 'Cause I know nothing's ever my fault. Seal up the border. Gotta stop letting all those Mexicans through. So what if the crop's right? I can still do the foxtrot. I'm not really sure if that is even true. Wasting away again. Searching for those facts I can label with thought. Some people claim that there is Putin to blame. I say no, that don't mean it's my fault. Yes, and some people claim Vladimir Putin's to blame.
So on the lawsuit front, the Santa Cruz Sentinel yesterday had an article on Saturday's April 13th paper. And above the fold, homeless group seeks camp closure halt by Jessica York. I've been critical of Jessica recently because while she's been dutifully reporting all the latest dips and drops and slips and slops in the city council's staff media from Susie O'Hara about the fabricated expectation she has of having shelter available to eliminate the Ross camp and to sideline any transitional encampment proposals by Drew Glover or Brent Adams or anybody else for that matter, claiming at first has to go through some elaborate community process of discussion whereby the NIMBYs, and essentially you're going to get a veto over everywhere and anywhere in the city, it sounds like. But maybe I'm too negative, but I don't really think so. You don't want to give the most bigoted and fearful a veto on the basic living needs of the poorest part of your population, particularly if they have a financial interest in doing that, because that's really the situation for people who have large property interests or even small but real property interests in Santa Cruz. They own their own home and so forth, that they don't want to see the value of their home decreased by having poor people in the neighborhood. It's one of the reasons why you had discriminatory stuff around Jews and Negroes and Mexicans in neighborhoods, so-called restrictive covenants. Situation there for people who are homeless. A lot of mythology running around about crime among the homeless and so forth. I mean, it's true. You get a lot of petty crime, or it's really hard to say. I don't even have the stats to say that, but I hear a lot of people stealing each other's blankets and so forth, desperation. So I guess if they want to hold on to their blankets, our housed community, maybe they ought to actually be more sensible to allow people sheltered situations where they can share and get some basic adequate necessities, as they're trying to do at places like Ross Camp, although it's not clear how successful they are yet. There isn't even any, as I was saying before in one of these interviews, any drinking water out there that's being supplied by the city in any regular way that I'm aware of. It's true that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, so it is this. The Ross Camp is also the one place in the city where there actually is... there are lots of porta-potties, even some disabled accessible porta-potties, some hand-washing stations. Really hard to find those elsewhere in any part of the city that are open 24 hours a day to poor people who are outside. There are three of them downtown, I believe. And I don't know if they're still open during the day. I think they're open only at night, or they used to be anyway. You know, the ones along Cedar Street. There were two of them. One kitty corner from the Calvary Episcopal Church, another one a block or so down, maybe two blocks down toward the town clock. And then, of course, the 24-hour porta potty that I've named the Posner poo-poo machine, that put out by Micah Posner, Phil Posner's son, when he was on the city council. Rather than having a 24-hour brick-and-mortar bathroom with running water and more decent, spacious facilities, open 24 hours, one already set up. I mean, they have those bathrooms in the parks. We got this glorified porta-potty that sits at the corner of Laurel and Front Street. Anyway, the Jessica York article does not talk about the numbers of homeless people in the city, although it does mention the Martin versus Boise requirement, or at least the lawsuit's demand. And this is really her first article on the lawsuit, even though it was presented to city council and made available to her at the city council. I want to be careful about that. I think, I don't know if Alicia Cole actually offered Jessica York a copy when she gave it to the city council, but it has been online available. It was filed last Tuesday, and then later in the Tuesday, and when Jessica wrote her article about the city council, she did have access to the federal court docket. She could go online and see that it was available and that it had been filed. Not to mention it in any meaningful way until this article published on Saturday, when in response to the press conference by the Ross Camp Council. Jessica credit, however, there is a lot of quoting of the actual residents, some of them who are parts of this lawsuit. Desiree Quintero is quoted. But again, she also, Jessica York then goes into, she flashes back to the health chief, Hajduk, and Arnie Leff, the health chief, Arnie Leff, and then quotes from Martine Bernal's letter to the city about why they can't close down the campground because there are new legal rules that require there'll be low barrier shelter available for displaced encampment sleepers in order to legally close the encampment. And in fact, that's what City Attorney Condotti told me when I asked him at the Tuesday break in the city council meeting. So you're saying, I wanted to clarify, that you're going to go move in and close the camp, even if it's acknowledged that there's not adequate shelter in the city for homeless people generally. You will claim that if you can just offer the people that you're displacing some place to go, and you'll claim that if they have to leave, even if they don't want to go, even if they want to stay where they are, even if they prefer to stay where they are. If you also claim there's some sort of health and safety problem somewhere in the camp, and one of the considerations that the lawsuit folks, the people who are defending the right of the Ross Camp people to stay, has said that you have to show not only that there's a problem in one part of the camp, that it impacts the community of the camp in a way that requires them to do some kind of complete, more serious relocation of everybody there. And, of course, Alicia Kuhl and others at the camp, Alicia is their liaison, and the folks at the camp are some of them who are plaintiffs and some of them are simply living there, seem to be saying that the argument being made is they should be able to themselves clean up the camp without having to leave the camp. They can do it only sort of part by part. And I think that Alicia Kuhl has been sympathetic to that approach, but that hasn't really been there. She keeps asking for what the city can provide in terms of what they want done, and they keep being vague about it, not giving a date or a time when they want to move in, not saying what kind of specific procedures they want to follow, not talking about what sorts of shelter they might actually have for the people there. And I'd say it's understandable because they don't have shelter. So it's part of a kind of a big continuing false narrative presented by Susie O'Hara and the city manager's office, and promulgated also by Jessica York, who has not been taking seriously or even reporting the concerns of other homeless activists that there is no such shelter, it doesn't exist. And instead she quotes at length, Susie O'Hara's claims, not so much in this article. In this article, it's the health director left and the fire chief and the need for, the painting of the camp as really being in a dangerous, abnormal population of rodents, rapid spread of outbreaks such as influenza and hepatitis A, although none of that has been seen there, as far as I know. Insufficient spacing between the tents, poor access and exit, stuff that could be addressed, and actually the campers wanted to address some of it with the help of Parks and Rec people, but that hasn't really been happening very much. And in fact, we are, by we I mean to say those of us who are supporters of the camp, and I don't know how personally involved I am, but I'm certainly a sympathizer, are planning on noon Monday, the 15th, which would be tomorrow, to go down and at noon begin a camp cleanup and attempt to meet some of the concerns of the campers there, because it is there is a lot of congestion. What's really needed, of course, is a secondary camp somewhere else, not necessarily a dispersal of the Ross camp, but another place to for people to go. And there's rumors that is being developed, although I don't have any details as to where that is. And we're not talking about the city developing it, but homeless people themselves. As they originally found this spot, they will find other spots in the city to go to. The issue is going to be whether the city is going to use these new laws, procedures for eliminating camps passed at the Tuesday City Council meeting, to disperse the camps without having adequate shelter to send people to, using health and safety pretexts. That's a really serious question without any real protections. And I proposed language that I wanted Drew Glover to put into place, and none of that language, as far as I know, got in there. But Michael does have, again, as I say, some sympathetic discussion, or at least quotations, from actual people for the first time, plaintiffs who are suing the city. And perhaps it's because people are suing the city that they're getting a modicum of respect, because cities tend to start respecting when their pocketbooks are threatened, and Santa Cruz is probably no exception here. I was asked to go back and actually play some of the city council meeting of last Tuesday. That'll be the 9th, but I noticed there's a new city council meeting coming up on next Tuesday, on the 16th, a City Council special meeting at 4 o'clock with presentations by the Public Works Department and the Parks and Recreation Department. I'm going to see if City Council Drew Glover has any comments on this. We'll see if we can reach him by phone. I'm giving him a call and seeing if we can reach him to figure out, because there's absolutely no files indicated on the online website. Ringing Drew Glover. But we may not get through.
Hi, this is Drew Glover, executive.
And it looks like we aren't getting through.
I'm unfortunately unable to turn to my phone right now, but please leave me your name, number, and a brief message, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks so much, and remember, pollinate your mind.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hi, Drew. This is Robert Norris calling from Free Radio. I'm doing an afternoon, I'm doing the Sunday show, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on at the 4 o'clock Tuesday, the 16th special city council meeting. Apparently Public Works and Parks and Rec, but there's no mention of any files or supporting material, just presentations. Maybe you can give me a call back and let the audience know just what the heck is happening. 423-4833 is my number, and if not, perhaps we'll see you at 3 o'clock on Monday.